Good. I would like, first of all, to thank the organizer for the invitation to give this talk. It's a pleasure to be at Fields Institute. So what I would like to talk today is about a very recent result about the standard family. Actually, it's very recent in the sense that I'm going to put shortly on the archive. So I believe these are kind of interesting results, and I also hope that you will find them interesting as well. So let me very quickly introduce the problem. So we are going to study a family, a one-parameter family, of a representative map of the two torus. We are fixing some notation here. We get a parameter, which is a positive real number, a function phi, which is analytic, and just to fix the ideas, we usually take this function with some normalization. And then we consider this family of maps on the two torus. Some properties of the map. Well, Fk is a, for every k, is a symplectic reversible exact twist diffeomorphism. Well, symplectic means that it preserves the x, the y, the symplectic form. Reversible means that there exists an involution which conjugates f with its inverse. Exact means that if you take any horizontal line, its image will be, the area between its image and the original line is going to be zero. And twist diffeomorphisms means that you have, if you have a vertical line, it will wind around the torus and with some strictly positive slope. So what's up about this map? Well, this is a very well-known family of maps. It has lots of physical implications. I mean, lots of physical models can be described by this iteration of this map. And also, it's a very nice and simple and natural example of a twist diffeomorphism. And the interesting fact about this map is that we basically can't prove anything about it. I mean, not really, but we don't prove anything interesting somehow. So let me just show you what happens for various values of k. So the only parameter for which you can say something meaningful, which is actually unfortunately not very interesting, is if k is equal to zero. So if k is equal to zero, this is just integrable map of the two torus. So the torus is foliated by this one tori, and on each of these one tori, you have the dynamics is just a rotation by some angle. So what happens when you turn on the perturbation, this k now is very small, close to zero, so you see here, lots, KM theory tells you that lots of these invariant tori are actually preserved. You see something here which looks like the phase portrait of a pendulum, but if you look very closely, let's say exponentially small regions, exponentially in k, in square root of k maybe, you see that there's actually something going on here. You have, this is a very tiny, tiny square down there. You blow it up, you see that there's actually some chaos going on. Unfortunately, you actually can't prove anything about this. You know, there are horseshoes and stuff, but you can't prove this thing as positive measure whatsoever, even if it's believed to happen. So if you keep going up with the parameter, you get soon to the green value, which was mentioned yesterday, for instance, in the Arturo's talk, and you have these kind of pictures where you have lots of elliptic islands and also some chaoticity, and they kind of take equal share of the phase space. And for very big k's, you get that chaoticity kind of takes on, and the whole torus looks like to be, dynamics looks to be chaotic on the whole torus, but you can always find for an arbitrarily large k, small islands like this one, which is a blow up of the region under, where the dynamics is conjugated to a rotation. So no matter how big you take this k, you will always gonna find some islands like that. So there are a bunch of very natural questions about this map. I guess the most natural maybe is the following. So is there a single parameter for which this map is ergodic? It's a very natural question. It has been posed as soon as the map was kind of getting popular. And of course, nobody can prove this for a single value of the parameter. There's a conjecture by Carlson in 91, which says that the Lebesgue measure, well, the density of the parameter set for which Fk has no elliptic islands whatsoever is actually going to get a full as the parameter gets larger and larger. So this does not imply ergodicity, but that's it's definitely a necessary condition if you have elliptic unless the map is not ergodic at all. And this is still very, very far from being understood. So in 94, Sinai posed another question. So you consider this other set, which is a set of parameters for which the map has actually a positive entropy, Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy with respect to the invariant measure, which is the bag. And then, well, there are a bunch of things that might happen. There can be, this thing can just be non-empty. There can be some point for which this is true. Can be actually true for a positive measure set of parameters. Or as basically everybody believes, you have this condition here, which is that actually for all but the integrable case, this map has positive entropy. So there are numerics for large parameters which suggest that this is actually true, and as there are numerics which suggest that for small parameters this is even again true. And this is these two questions are obviously related by Pissing's theory, because we know that whenever we have positive metric entropy, we do have a positive measure set on the phase space on which Fk is ergodic. This positive measure set we call stochastic C. So I would like to present a few results, a few previous results which are related to these questions. By no means they answer or give some intuition on what might go on, but they're very much related. So the first one is actually now a classical result by Duarte. In 94, he proved that for sufficiently large parameters, so there is the K naught, so that you can find a residual set of parameters, which I call MD, this stands for Duarte, such that if you pick this parameter in this residual set, then the standard map has infinitely many elliptic periodic points, and they are kind of dense in the sense that they accumulate in a locally maximal hyperbolic set which fills the phase space as K grows. This is actually, of course, non-conclusive in any sense for the questions we saw in the last slide, but definitely tells you that there's something complicated going on, because you have lots of elliptic islands, plenty of elliptic islands, to quote Duarte, at any parameter even for very large parameters. So there's a very recent result by. There's a recent result by Garagetsky in 2010. So everybody again thinks that the stochastic C should have positive Lebesgue measure. So what he proved is that the stochastic C has full outs of dimension, which is again going towards this idea of the fact that the stochastic C must be a big thing, but nevertheless proved nothing about the questions we asked before. So. Well, you can define it as the set where you have at least a positive Lyapunov exponent. Okay, so this is the state of the art, and then I would like to present a couple of results which are very much in the spirit of Duarte. So the first one says the following: so there you have for large enough parameters, you can find a dense set of parameters for which has house of dimension larger than 1/4. Such that whenever the same thing happens, the same thing as in Duarte happens, whenever the parameter belongs to this set, then you have infinitely many elliptic islands whose center accumulate on a locally maximal hyperbolic set, which fills the torus for large parameters. And on top of this, this is a kind of lower bound. You find a somehow big set of parameters so that this happens. And on the other hand, you also have this result, which is an upper bound, which says that provided that you restrict yourself to cyclicity 1, I'm going to explain, of course, what this means, elliptic islands, then for almost all parameters, you only have finitely many of them, which is, as far as I know, an upper bound on the measure has never been obtained. Okay, this is not by any means an upper bound on a measure of parameters which you have all elliptic islands, but you have a very specific class, but still, it's something you might control, and it's actually interesting to see how you can get to this result. So before, of course, trying to show you how to prove these two results, I might make sure that you want to understand what cyclicity 1 means, otherwise this is totally empty. Okay, so here what I could prove, so first of all, I believe that this locally massive one hyperbolic set contains Duarte hyperbolic set. So you should, this is in the sense of Duarte. But what you can actually prove by hand is that if k to suitable power, say k to the minus one half neighborhood of this hyperbolic set covers the torus. This is what I could say. Pardon me? Fills the phase space. Okay? So, pardon me? It means that as k goes to infinity, smaller and smaller neighborhoods of the hyperbolic set cover the phase space. It's what Duarte says about fields of torus. Okay. It's the two torus, like the phase space. So it fills, yeah, fills the whole thing. No. So it's dense in the whole space. Okay. So let me first. What I need to do, first of all, is to say what cyclicity means. And in order to do so, I need to define a few things. The first thing I want to say is that this is a very basic observation, which has been done long ago. But for large k, you can construct a set, which we call a critical set, CK, and cone fields, which are invariant outside the critical set. Of course, this is not going to be invariant, otherwise it would be in business. But nevertheless, you can produce such one-step invariant cone fields outside the suitably defined critical set. And well, there are many choices for this set, and I want to present the one I use. So in order to do so, well, we need to control cone fields. For convenience, if you want, instead of considering vector fields, I consider slope fields. And for even more convenience, I consider what I call k-adapted slope fields, which are these transform-like slopes with a k in front. So k will go to infinity. I don't want to have slopes with blow-up, so I will just renormalize everything with k. And by doing so, you can just compute these two things, which is the push forward and a pull back by the diffeomorphism, and you find these formulas, whatever they are. They tell you that if h is big enough, these slopes are squished towards h1 in the forward direction and h-1 in the backward direction, and h1 and h-1 are given by this expression. So to draw a picture, you have the torus here, and I want to make sure that my slopes are large enough. So the thing we need to throw away is where these slopes are small. If you have a look at the formulas, you get that this set is just made of two strips, two very small strips around critical points of phi dot. And outside of this region, you have these cones, which, so the unstable cone is something which is a very, very narrow cone around the H1 direction, and which is very steep because here, remember, you have KH, a kappa H, and instead the stable cone is just horizontal and is slightly larger. So you have a stable cone and unstable cones, and these are invariant by the dynamics. And moreover, I should add that you also can obtain an expansion rate bound, a lower bound. So you have cones which are in unstable cone are expanded by at least k to the alpha, and slopes which are in the stable cone are expanded backwards by the same amount. So this is what I'm using. And now I can define what cyclicity is. So you have a pick a periodic point for f. So I will define a quantity to each. I will attach a quantity for each periodic point. And what I do is simply I count the number of points in its orbit which intersect C. This is actually quite natural. So what you immediately notice is that since you have invariance outside CK, if you have a periodic point which never touches C, then it's going to be hyperbolic. Therefore, if you want to look for elliptic fixed points, periodic points, you have necessarily to take positive cyclicities. The simplest case would be cyclicity is equal to 1, which is precisely what we study. So this more or less tells you that you should restrict yourself to the simplest possible elliptic islands you might find in elliptic in the standard map, then these two results, what you expect somehow holds. And it's also natural to formulate a conjecture, and the conjecture simply says that, well, this is not true for only cyclicity one island, but for bounded cyclicity elliptic islands. Or we can imagine of cook up some condition saying that if the period is larger than some NS, as is the cyclicity of the periodic point, then you will have only finitely many elliptic islands for almost all values of the parameter. Okay, so these are the two results I would like to talk about. They follow from the same construction, so I will present the proof of both of them at the same time. And I would like to start with the proof. So the first thing to do is to construct the hyperbolic set, an hyperbolic set on the complement of the critical set. So there's a technical thing to notice. We are gonna construct a hyperbolic set and the Markov partition of the hyperbolic set. Of course, this set is not invariant by any means, so we actually need to select a pair of critical sets which are simply of the same order. You just take a smaller parameter. So the expansion here is not going to change. It's just going to be different by O1 factor. Anyways, that's how it works. And what you want to construct? You construct first of all a locally maximal hyperbolic set on the complement of the smaller set, and by this condition over here, you know that you have expansion rates in both directions on the appropriate manifolds, which is bounded below by this factor k to the alpha. Then we can construct a Markov partition of the hyperbolic set, and what we get is that, of course, if you have a point which belongs to the hyperbolic set, you will get some coding of this by the Markov partition. This is very old school. This is a finite Markov partition, yes. For every k, you can bound the number of elements of the Markov partition, yes. But of course, this is by no means a Markov partition of the whole space. It's just you have to throw away lots of things. You don't have islands in a hyperbolic set, no? Mm. Yes. Yes, but I don't look at them. This is a partition not of the space. This is a partition of. This is not a part. I'm throwing away lots of stuff. I actually the very next slide I will maybe give you an answer. So, let me proceed to the second step. So what I do, I extend this construction, and of course I can't get, as you were pointing out, a Markov partition with finite a finite Markov partition of the phase space, or rather of the complement of the critical set. But what I can get is a finite, actually, for lack of better terminology, maybe some of you can give me a hint about it. Anyways, what I have is a finite time Markov structure. What do I mean by that? You take a point which is in the complement of the critical set, and I just, let's say I can assign to it, I have a covering of the complement by some finite set, finite number of sets, and to each of these finite number of sets, I give some symbol, and these symbols are actually an extension of the previous alpha. This means that part of this covering is actually made of the partition we had before. So what I have a point in here on the complementary part of the phase space with respect to the critical set. And therefore, I get this A0. Then I iterate it once with a map, say, forward. So if I'm still outside the critical set, I can keep going and get A1. At some point, I might eventually land in the critical set, and then I stop my stuff, and this is the meaning of... I stop my coding, this is the meaning of this right angular bracket. You do the same thing backward. So what you get is that for each point in the complement of a critical set, you get some kind of finite word, which belongs to a finite alphabet, which doesn't tell you much about the point, but will be very useful to classify points. further, what can I do outside of the complement, meaning in the critical set? I can, say, if I have no luck at all and the image of the point will belong to the critical site, I will just say, okay, I don't know what happened, so the point will not have a coding whatsoever. But if it visits some pieces of the complement of the critical site, I will just take note of them in this way. I just take note of which are the label for the sites I visit with the orbit of this point. And I call this itinerary of the point, this omega of p. So what I want to do now, this gives you a kind of partition of points in a critical set. And what I want to do is to restrict my search for elliptic periodic points among points which have the same itinerary. So I define this set over here as a set of parameters for which there exists a cyclicity 1 elliptic periodic point for the standard map with the assigned itinerary, and I can get any length of the, I can fix omega of any length whatsoever. Moreover, what I do, I this is kind of convenient, I will partition my parameter space in chunks of order 1, just to have some, well, there's some periodicity going on, and this way I just get one chunk of periodicity. And by doing this, I can already state the main two lemmata, which give you, the first one gives you an upper bound. So the first thing to prove, well, this is actually very trivial. You have just a finite, since you, the number of elements of the covering Markov, of the Markov covering are finite, you can at most have an exponential in the length of the word, number of words that you need to check. Then you prove the two following things. You prove that for each given omega, there can be at most one cyclicity 1 elliptic periodic point for fk of that itinerary, which means that, okay, this very coarse coding is not in one-to-one correspondence with all points of the phase space, but it is in one-to-one correspondence with all elliptic periodic points. And finally, what you prove is the following: you have an estimate of the measure of the phase of the parameter space for which you actually have an elliptic island, and this is given by this quantity over here. Moreover, you also have a lower bound, and the lower bound is given by the following lemma. So you have both density and lower bound. Actually, you can pick any ball in the parameter space, any small ball that you want. Then I can produce you a natural number n, which is of this order, log of diameter of b, and an itinerary omega, which is of this length, such that the set of good parameters, I mean, of parameters for which you have an elliptic island of this itinerary, is contained in this ball. And moreover, this set contains an interval which has this diameter. So it actually is kind of fat. You can construct such a thing. Moreover, you can actually choose arbitrarily, in some sense, the middle, say, log n symbols. So you have this, you can give me a sequence of log n symbols, and I will cook up this omega in such a way that the middle log n are exactly the one that you give me. So, but from this dilemma, you can actually get the proof of our result. And this is actually the from the upper bound, this is actually very trivial. So since you prove that if you have a cyclicity 1 periodic point, then there's an itinerary such that this is actually true. So these things actually cover the itinerary thing. By giving me an itinerary, you actually will get a cyclicity 1 periodic point, and there's no other cyclicity 1 except for those which are given by itineraries. And then, it's a very simple Borel-Kaltner dilemma. You just combine these two estimates and you have that the total measure of this thing is finite, and so the probability of getting an infinite number of them is actually zero. So that's easy. Moreover, let me point out that this is not only finite, but it actually goes down as we take larger and larger parameters, and there's a a conjecture by Carlson, which says that, again, you have no elliptic islands with full density for large parameter sets. This actually holds for cyclicity 1 periodic points. From the lower bound, you have this lemma, then we can construct a smaller locally maximal hyperbolic set, which is in a complement of the larger critical set. Remember that cyclicity 1 islands just can visit the complement of the larger critical set, so we cannot expect them to be dense in the larger one. And then what we do is we can enumerate for fixed length all possible length of possible words in the Markov partition, or possible words with the admissible symbols with given length. And then what you do is you just by applying this lemma over and over again, you can construct easily a counterset in containing this ball. And using this lemma, you can make sure that at each step of the counterset, you will get closer and closer to any point in the hyperbolic set, just because you will fix words given by this enumeration. So you will get arbitrarily close to any point. And this concludes the proof, because this is basically what you need to say about density. So in the remaining 5 minutes, okay, I will very briefly sketch the proof. There's going to be a quantum number of cartoons here. So the both lemmata comes from a geometric construction. It's a very old idea. I mean, people thought about this, I guess, but somehow the details didn't work out. But this is a very, classical, I guess, way of going to try to solve this problem. You define these domains, which for fixed itinerary, you take all points in the critical set which belong to this itinerary, and you also get the image of this point. You compute, you make some computations, and you find out that these two cartoons are actually what you get. So this is almost flat. This domain is bounded by two vertical lines and two almost flat curves, and the image of it is bounded by two vertical lines and two almost parabolic curves. And you can find good coordinates, which are given by the push forward of the vertical line field and the pullback of the vertical line field, which are given by these two colors, red and blue. And in particular, you can find leaf functions, something that they call leaf function, which are just functions on the critical set. C is something on the projection on T1 of the critical set down here. And these leaf functions are given by the respectively the pullback, the red ones, and the push forward, the blue ones, of vertical the vertical foliation inside the critical set. So once you have these, you also get some geometrical bounds, meaning that this picture has this size. You have this is small k to the alpha minus 1. This is small L omega minus 1 to the size of the critical set. And L omega is just given by some expansion rate condition, which can be proved to be larger than k to the length of the word times alpha by this condition over here on the cones. Once you have these, there's another crucial fact that you prove, is that how this picture depends on k. So you move k, you want to see what happens on the picture. And you can prove this thing. You can prove that the function L flat and L sharp, the difference between them, which is the difference for each fixed vertical line of where the curve actually are, is given by 1, which means that if you move k, this picture will move with speed 1, which is what I was trying to show with this small cartoon over here. So if you move k by kappa by 1, you can control very well how these two curves of these two strips intersect. Once you have this, you prove that you need an ellipticity condition about the slope of this leaf, which is of the same order L to the minus 1 of omega, which is going to be very small. And then we can construct an adapted critical set for each given omega and k, which has the same thickness as this ellipticity condition. Then we can restrict this domain on this adapted critical set, and now the picture is like that. You have this is this thick, And these two domains are now L to the L omega 3 minus 2. Once you prove this, you also prove something more. You prove that the whole thing is of the same order, because you have bounds on the slope of these curves. And then you know that if you have a cyclic D1 elliptic parodying point, then it has to belong to both delta bar sharp and its image, because it's going to be a periodic point. So you actually need to these two things to intersect. But remember, these two things still move with velocity 1, so the intersection condition is of this order, which is precisely what you need. On the other hand, we also need to prove that whenever these things intersect, you also have critical you also have periodic points. This can be easily done by considering diagonal leads, and you can, well, this is basically the conservative Hanon map, no? So whenever the image of the diagonal we intersect, you will have a periodic point. You also can check an ellipticity condition of the same order, and you get both upper and lower bounds. And this star means that, provided that these two things actually intersect completely. And once you have this, you can also prove by the same argument that there can be at most one elliptic periodic point with given omega. Just by this picture, you can see that, well, if you have an elliptic periodic point, it has to be inside this. And how many intersections can these two guys have together? Just two. But if you compute the ellipticity, the eigenvalue of each of these two periodic points, there one is going to be elliptic and the other one is going to be hyperbolic, because it's just a saddle node bifurcation, so it can't be anything else. And to conclude, well, you have the density argument, which is very quick. There's just another cartoon to show, and you can actually prove that there is some relation between how you give me the itinerary and how the domains in the critical set are distributed, which means that if you fix the first R and the last R symbols in your itinerary, then what you see is that the critical set is the whole thing, and you see them bunched around in some small strip, which is of this height. And this is, again, something related to the expansion in the first and the last R symbols. And once you have this, then you have the untrivial intersection between these two collection of domains for this size. And since you have good control on the dependence on K, you can actually, for any given ball, you can find what I call here a bicylinder of appropriate rank, which has this good intersection property exactly in the ball you're looking for. And once you have that, then by the previous arguments, you also have elliptic islands, elliptic periodic points with diameter which is given by this, which finally this m to the minus rank, m to the minus 4 rank will let you construct a hyperbolic set, a Cantor set of Hausdorff dimension 1 fourth. And well, final remarks. This is a very general construction. It just relies on a Morse condition of critical points. And moreover, it gives plenty of information on the parameter space. Now, this is just, the two results are just some kind of side results which come from this construction. In particular, it seems that you can use it to study higher cyclicity without getting a geometrical understanding of multiple passages for the critical set, which is something it's beyond any reasonable expectation. And moreover, well, you have good size on the size of good estimate on the size of elliptic islands, which seems to be sharp for cyclicity 1. This might, I don't know, if this program somehow gives you good bounds also for higher cyclicity, you can use this to, for example, show that the whole set of elliptic islands cannot possibly fill the phase space. So I will thank you for your attention. They're basically them, yes, of course. Yes.
So you can expect that maybe understanding how the homophilic bifurcations work, this is an alternative approach.
Yes, exactly. This is actually what Duarte does, no?
Yeah.
But he just gets residual, and we get residual plus house of dimension, because this is actually very concrete. You can, if you, so you have a Markov partition, say here, on the complement. If you tell me where you want your orbit to be, I can provide you a parameter which gives you an elliptic orbit with just to that. I was trying to make a picture saying thank you, but I mean, you can do that. It's actually very constructive.
If you have K1000 to dial it, it'll be small.
Yes, of course. It's going to be K2-3 over alpha.
Yeah. And which is the particularity of the standard map? Maybe, I mean, can you apply the same arguments to most general
map? I think so. I mean, this construction actually. This whole thing came out of a question with that Vadim Kaloshin asked me. He was trying to basically translate his results with Arayevsky about basically sensing finiteness, prevalence of finiteness of things in the non-measure preserving setting to the area preserving case. And the first natural thing to do was to try with a standard map, and it actually worked. So, but yeah, in principle, it should be applied. I mean, again, there's just this condition of non-degeneracy of critical points. It seems to be very weak, and you can construct all these things. Cyclicity one is very easy. I mean, easier than anything else. Yes. As soon as you can cook up something with this condition, you can create critical sets, and then you can study what happens. Because you see, here what we rely on is the fact that you have control, because once you are hyperbolic, you have everything gets very smooth and everything gets aligned, and then you have just one step in which things can go very bad. And things can go very bad in just one way here, and just by bending in the wrong direction. But since you can control this by just one step, you can control that. You can do that. And then, well, you can do that. You can obtain information on the parameter space.